Thank you for listening to an audio recording from the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative dedicated to preserving America's history through the timeless practice of oral storytelling. To learn more about the Tell Me a Story program, including how you can add your own story to the collection, visit MidwestGenealogyCenter.org/tellmeastory. On behalf of the Midwest Genealogy Center and Mid-Continent Public Library, we hope you enjoy the following story.
It is 8 o'clock in the evening on February 26, 2017. I am Katie Althoff, the granddaughter of...
Margaret Althoff. Margaret Ryan Althoff. And since today is the 26th, Grandpa, who's no longer with us, his birthday was yesterday, the 24th. Two days ago. It was on Friday. He's the 24th, but born in 1925. That's why I mix it up.
So the first question is, where did you grow up?
I was born in Royal Oak, Michigan, right outside of Detroit, Michigan, because my father worked for the Detroit Free Press. But when the crash came, he lost his job and the banks failed, so you couldn't cash a paycheck. So we had to leave Michigan. They lost their home. And we left there probably in about 1932. And we headed for Auburn, New York, where my grandparents were, which was my father's father and my step-grandmother, who was the best grandmother in the world because she took five of us into her home. And the story goes on endlessly with that part. But we moved from there to New York City because my dad was in a sub as a photo engraver for the newspapers in New York. And he was sent out on daily jobs to the different papers. And I believe they had at least 20 or 25 papers in the city at that time. And we were there for a year. And then he didn't like raising us in the city, so we moved to Jersey City, which was less crowded, and he took the subway into New York. And then from there, we moved to Nutley, New Jersey, where we stayed permanently. And that's where I spent most of my growing up years. I went to 4th and 5th grade in Nutley Public School, and then 6th and 8th grade, I went through St. Mary's, and from there into Nutley High School. And my schooling after that was secretarial school in Newark, Washington School for Secretaries.
What was your childhood like?
I think it was very happy and content because we didn't know the problems my parents were going through. When we were in Michigan, what little I remember was a zoo where I saw a gorilla roller skating. I thought that was pretty nice at the Detroit Zoo. And when they had bought a brand new two-family house, and when they could no longer afford to carry the tenants because nobody was working, they let us play on the second floor, and then they could no longer hold on financially, so that's when we left. But it was probably, even though it was a depression right on through until 1938, easily. We were never aware that things were really bad. We always ate well. We were up at my grandparents' at least 6 months, and then we left there because during the 6 months, my aunt and uncle, who were also in Auburn, were getting the second floor fixed up into an apartment so there'd be enough bedrooms and so forth. And so we stayed in Auburn until I was 5 years old. I went my first kindergarten school. Classes were in Auburn and some public school. I don't know. It's last time I was up in Auburn, it was torn down. All I saw were the steps to the school. That was it. And from there, we left and went to New York City. And I think I've did tell all of that, leaving New York City, going to Jersey City, and from Jersey City to Nutley, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And I think that's pretty. Did that cover it all?
Sounds good. Yeah. Everyone's there. So who were your favorite relatives?
My favorite relatives, well, at the time we were up in Auburn, it would definitely be my step-grandmother and grandfather. I had an aunt and uncle up there also, which was my dad's sister. But Grandma, she had two children that were grown, but they didn't marry until later in life. And so we were her only grandchildren. and she thought everything we did was funny. She doted on us. And it wasn't until I was married that I ever realized that she was a step-grandmother, because my grandfather's wife died in her 40s, and then he married his cousin's wife because she had lost her husband. And so that was how he knew her. So I thought, gee, how could he marry somebody that was a relative? Well, she wasn't. The cousin was a relative, not her. And while we were with my grandparents, I lost my brother, who was 7 months old. He had caught a cold on the train, and they couldn't figure out what was wrong with him. But that's something to do with the intestines colliding. It usually only showed up in elderly people, not babies. But in his case, that's what it was. And it was written up in the New York Journal of American Medicine. And that would have been written up probably in 1933. And she also had my brother and I come down with whooping cough. So we were laid up with that for a while. And then I whacked my chin or neck. It was the neck, actually. I got an abscess on the gland, and that had to be operated on her kitchen table. Back in those days, during the Depression, they operated in strange places. The hospital was two doors down, but there wasn't enough money to be going formally to a hospital, even though my aunt was a nurse there. She got the doctors to come to the house, and there were several specialists that handled him. With me, it was on the kitchen table. With my younger brother that died, that was on the dining room table.
What was the name of the brother that died?
Thomas E. Ryan. He was a namesake. It was Thomas E. Ryan III, because my grandfather was senior, my father was junior, and he was the third. And he was laid out in, they had drawing doors on the living room, and he was laid out there. And I was probably, I'm going to say about three when he died. I was three when he died. And I went in with my brother and looked. We weren't supposed to be in there. Somebody forgot to close the doors. And my brother and I looked at him, and my brother said, he's dead. I said, I know. I don't think so. He looks like he's asleep. And we played with the pennies on his eyes because we wondered why the pennies were there. And it looked like he was in a white bassinet. And so we didn't have, I don't know what my brother felt. I certainly didn't have any emotions over it because I don't think we fully understood. It just was a sleeping baby. And that was the extent of it. But
Do you remember any of the stories that any of your relatives would have told you?
Do I remember any of the stories? Let's see. Well, my mom tells about when she was young. She got tired of her brothers and sisters. She was from a family of seven, and because she was the youngest and her dad had already died, they would say, Adele, go get me this, Adele, go get me that. And she got so annoyed one day, she decided she was leaving home. She was probably about six at the time, but she wasn't allowed to cross the street, so she kept walking around the block. And finally the policeman said, little girl, are you lost? It's the third time you've passed this way. And she said, no, I've left home. I'm so mad at my family because they keep telling, my brothers and sisters keep telling me what to do and bossing me around, and I'm fed up with it. And so I'm not going home anymore. And he said, well, I think by now they're really worried because, you know, it's almost dark and you don't want to be out on the street. They'll be really happy. I bet they're crying at this point. So anyway, she said she listened to the policeman and went back home. That's my mom's story. And then my dad tells one about he and Mary left home. He was a little girl he played with, and they were about four and five at the time, and they decided they would just take off together. And they walked quite a distance, and they cut through some field, and eventually the town they ended up in, they got out of Auburn. They must have been pretty good walkers. And a lady in a store, it was kind of a confectionery store, where you could buy ice cream, sodas, and things like that. She looked out and saw these two little ones standing out there, and they looked like they were pretty tired, and she didn't see any adults around. So she went out and asked what they were doing and so forth, and they said, oh, we're just walking. We're not going home anymore. And she said, how would you like something to eat? I have cookies inside and milk. And of course, they thought that was great, so they went in, and she called the police. And the police came and took them home. They at least luckily knew where they lived. And my dad said he always remembers Mary getting out of the car and saying to the policeman, "Thanks, mister, for the nice ride." So that's that story.
That's funny. How did you and Grandpa meet?
Grandpa, I knew from the time, let's see, I knew of him. I saw him tap dancing when I went to see a movie at the Nutley movie theater. He had danced with Fred Probost's dance group, which was himself and two of Fred's sons. And then I heard the name for the first time, didn't mean a whole lot. But then later, when I went to the prom, I went to the senior prom in my junior year, and he was part of the entertainment. He was doing the singing and tap dancing type of thing. And he did Everything's Up to Date in Kansas City was one of the songs that he sang. And he had a mop on his head when he sang it. It wasn't really too appealing, but anyway, at least he was funny. And so that was the second time I saw him. And then people would point out, oh, there's Jack Althoff. He must be home from college. He was crossing the street, and he had a trench coat on. But I saw him from like a half a block away. Finally, people would say hello to him, and I said, "Was that Jack Althoff?" And they said, "Yeah, why?" And I said, "I've never met him." So they said, "Well, on the way out, I'll introduce you." Well, somebody had gone to school with him. So on the way out, we were introduced. And then a couple of months went by, and I saw him at the library, and he walked home with Sissy and myself. And then that was another month or two went by, and I went to a later mass. I usually went to the 9 o'clock, and he evidently always went to the 11. So I got up later and went to the 11, and he saw me there. And so we waited outside. He said, "I didn't know you went to St. Mary's." And I said, "Yeah, I went to school here, but we were in school at different times, so our paths never crossed." So from that time on, that was the beginning of the, I don't know if it was the beginning of the end or whatever, but that was the beginning.
So my dad, John Charles Althoff, is your son. What was he like growing up?
I'm going to say the boys, he and his brother Tom, under school age, were probably a lot harder to raise than girls, because the girls are a little quieter. They were easier to take when you went to visit somewhere, someone, particularly grandparents, so they wouldn't touch things. But Tom and John were unique. They were very active. They loved to rough and tumble on the floor. But once they went to school, both of them, they were really pretty much model kids. As far as being, I never ever got any kind of a note from school that they were a problem. But once they went to school, with the girls, it was reversed. Once the girls go to school, I find they're harder, only because they worry about their clothes, they worry what people say to them, or how they look. So in that sense, but even there, I never had behavior problems with in school. Trying to think with John. No, he was a conformist almost all the way through, whether it was grammar school or high school. In fact, it was kind of fun to go to school because people would say, "You're doing a wonderful job raising them." I could always rely on that being a good report. And so you kind of felt it was worth raising them.
That's good. Do you remember any songs that you used to sing to him? And can you sing one?
Let's see. Well, actually, the one that I sang to all of them, but it sang separately to each one, was the one with the lullaby song. I'm trying to think how that is. We just sang it before with John. "You're a nice little Johnny." Isn't that terrible? "Lullaby and good night. You're a nice little Johnny, and we love you. Yes, we do. And we love you very much. In the dawn when I'm really having trouble remembering songs now. When in the dawn, when you're awake, I can't remember the rest of it. Isn't that awful?
It'll come back, in a few minutes.
Yeah, the main one I remember the best was the one that was now run along home and jump into bed, say your prayers and cover your head. The very same thing I say unto you. You dream of me, and I'll dream of you. Good night. Good night. Good night. Because you had to say goodnight a few times and get a glass of water and then some.
That's good. What is the worst thing that he ever did?
Well, now, and as we got older, we think some of the things are funny. But I think at the time, he and his brother had broken the water meter glass, and I didn't know. They came up and told me, they said, you know the thing in the basement that Daddy measures water with? So I'm thinking they're talking about a Pyrex measuring cup. And I said, yes. I said, well, it's broken. I said, well, leave the glass alone, then Dad will clean that up. And that was the extent of it. Never thought any more of it until one day the man who read the water meter was German. And he pounded on the door. He said, I fixed that water meter when you first moved in this house, and it's broken again. I was very annoyed. And he said, I don't like kids to be destructive. What kind of children are you raising? I said, well, wait a minute, I'll get the boys. And the boys came down, and they said, remember, we told you that we broke it. And the man turned to them and said, well, you don't break things like that. What's your reason for breaking it? And one said, well, we wanted to see, we didn't mean to actually break it. We wanted to see what kind of water was in there. My brother thinks it's the toilet water and it's dirty. And I think that it's the water that you drink. It's clean water. So what I know, when I turn the faucet on, it goes around real fast. And my brother said, but when he goes over and looks flushes the toilet, it turns around real fast. And before the man could say any more, he didn't want to burst out laughing at that point, so he just turned quickly and went out the side door. And that was the extent of it. So he realized that they really weren't destructive. They were just curious, and they were trying to prove a point as to what kind of water.
What were your parents like?
Very good parents. My brother and sister and I talk about it till this day. My other brother is dead, but... We had a mom, as the doctor would say, if I didn't know better, I'd think you were an only child, because Mom gave so much attention to each one of us. She treated us like we were an only child. She loved people. I don't think she ever said a word that wasn't kind about other people. She could see good in everyone, and she could explain people to you because she could see the good in people, she tried to explain when people criticize someone, but you have to stop and take in consideration the life that they've led. They've turned out very well. And that would kind of be her standard answer. She, wherever she got it from, I don't know, but it was a nice trait. My dad was a very good person also. Both were hardworking, and both were encouraging. My dad was much stricter than my mother, although my mom backed up my dad. My dad had laid down a rule. He had to follow it. But as far as when we're there with Mom, she didn't worry too much about being a little noisy or messy kind of thing. And yet she kept an immaculate house. She picked up after all of us, which was very hard when I first got married and hung my jacket on the chair with a closet only 2 feet away. And my husband was used to hanging things up, fortunately for me, because he said, you know, it's just as easy to put right on the hanger when you come in. Never thought to do that. And so I started into those kind of habits very quickly. Or we would have had coats everywhere. But she did. She picked up after all of us.
Wow. That's amazing. Maybe share a little bit about, like, what great-grandpa did and some of his hobbies. Like, what he did for work and some of his hobbies. Grandpa Ryan,
okay. Mm-hmm. And that's right, he's great-grandpa.
Great-grandpa, right. Your dad.
Yeah, let's see. What some of his hobbies were. gardening was his number one. My dad wanted to be a farmer, and he was going to go to Cornell to study farming. His father wanted to be a doctor, and he wasn't going to waste his money on somebody studying farming, because coming from Ireland, anybody can farm as far as Grandpa was concerned, because that was the main occupation of Irish people. And so and so Dad didn't get to go to Cornell to study farming. Instead, he decided, since his father wasn't interested in financing that, he learned that the New York Times would send you to Cornell to study photo engraving. And so that's what he did. He studied, if you're the only one working in a small newspaper shop, you have to know photo engraving, etching, and stripping. So he learned the three, and you start out as an apprentice, which he did in Michigan. And then the Depression hit, so he was still an apprentice. And then he worked his way down to New York and became a journeyman finally. And while he was still a journeyman, he was drafted. And then they found out he had four kids. So they said, all right, we don't want you, but you can't stay in newspaper work. You have to get into defense work. So he had to leave that for several years. So he never became a master in his trade for quite a few years later. So I think from start to finish, it could have been 8 or 9 years. So when he had an apprentice, Bobby, he said to Bobby, you're not going to be dragged out like I was. If you do everything the way I tell you to do it, I guarantee you can be a master within 2 to 3 years. So then that's what Bobby became. My dad did something different. He learned it from an old timer with regards to photo engraving. I think he did something twice. You dipped it 2 or 3 times, and that way your work came out much clearer. And according to who did the work, there were two of them that did the same thing. It was my dad and someone else that did their work that way, working with the acids on metal. But someone else had done the work for Shirley Temple's pictures to go in, and she was very upset because she didn't like how poorly they turned out, and they were going to drop their contract with the New York Times. And so they called and wanted to know why the previous weeks, and then they explained, well, it's according to who's on. So they said, from now on, we want the work done by someone that does it. And so there were two of them. They made sure that thereafter, they didn't lose the contract, but thereafter, anything that pertained to that contract, my dad or the other gentleman did. I guess it was just something that they were taught by old timers. Did that answer the question? I remember that.
How would you like to be remembered?
How would I like to be remembered? I think I'd probably like to be remembered more when I was a little younger, because now I'm 87. It's only since I've gotten into my 80s I'm beginning to forget, as you can see, the words to songs. I used to know if I sang a song a couple of times, I could remember most of the songs that were played on the piano from the late 1800s that my mom would sing. Mom always sang around the house when she was cleaning, so I knew a lot of the old songs. And if I heard a song a few times, it stayed in my memory. But for some reason now, all of a sudden, that one song really bothers me. If I rehearsed it beforehand, I can get some of the words back. But I'd like to be remembered probably more maybe when I was somewhere between the age of about 40 to 60. Because I think after that you do start to slow down a bit. Maybe don't communicate as well. I'd like to think once I did communicate well. That's about it.
So, what things would you like to be remembered? Like things about you, or like character traits, or
about my blood?
About you. Like how would you like to be remembered? In what kind of person you were, or.
Well, you wouldn't have to know what religion I was, but you would know by my behavior that I was a practicing Christian, and that I showed it in how I treated others. Respect I give to others, and that I never showed prejudice or bias in any way or hurt anyone's feelings. I'm sure unknowingly I could hurt someone's feelings, but knowingly I'd never deliberately want to hurt someone's feelings. And if I did, I'd want to apologize for it, because I actually like people a lot. And the result is I took a test and I scored high on sales and music. And I really was not as qualified as either. I had studied so much music with no musical talent. And so therefore, when I take a test, it would show that I knew a lot about music, but I don't play the piano well. And then when it comes to liking people, oh, that means you probably could sell things. I can't even give things away. So I find that it's just a natural love for people, but not the kind of love where, oh, I love being with people so much. Would you mind buying these things? I can't do that.
You prefer to give.
Yeah, well, do much. I do.
You don't.
When I made thing, anything I've made, when the girl wanted me to make the, I said, oh, you can pay for the yarn for the baby, a blanket for her sister. I made it, and I said, what if it were to fall apart? What if the fringe came off? Oh, I'd feel terrible. I'll just give it to her. She said, don't I owe you anything? I said, no. I didn't even know the baby, but it was a girl, one of the girls that worked at Benton House. Mm-hmm. And I've done that now on a couple of things. They wanted to buy the bracelets that I make. No, I couldn't sell them. I could have probably about 50 people there that asked about them. So what I did before I left, I gave about 10 or 12 of them out. I went around and gave the ones that I was the friendliest with. And the lady that kept collecting little drug cups for me to put beads into, she'd say, do you have enough? And I'd say yes, but then she'd collect more. I must have had about 200 cups. She even got me some brand new ones from the nurses rather than used ones. She was so sweet, but she just seemed to love doing it. I didn't have the heart to say. So I said, she said, oh, you mean you have enough? And I'd say, oh, no, that's all right. My friend needs some too. My friend Laura, I said, she can use a lot of them. So every time she came in with a big smile on her face, I got more for you.
That's funny. Are you proud of me?
Oh, am I proud? Am I proud of Katie? Katie was a gem from the time she was born, just very special. At that point, she came, I think you were, you're the second one after, first came Laura, but Laura wasn't nearby. Then came Katie. Then we had one follow after Katie that was nearby, which was Nikki. And so they were, I don't know how many years difference they were, but I know that you were both at the house at the same time. But with Kate, the first thing that was outstanding to me about her was she was shy, which is a bit of myself at the same age. And it was a nun in Jersey City that kind of brought me out by treating me like I was one of the smart kids in the class in third grade. I thought, she doesn't know I'm one of the dumb ones, so I'm going to work really hard. And what I realized when I was older, I think she realized that the two Margaret she called on were the two that were shy and didn't like getting up in front of the class. So she'd say, would you girls, my two Margarets come in and clean the board, my two Margarets hand out the papers. And that was usually the smart kids got to do those things. So she was someone who turned my life around. But now with Kate, she took dancing. And we went to see her in a show in Pennsylvania. And I'm going to guess you could have been 6 or 7 maybe. Mm-hmm. And while she was shy off the stage, she's reversing me, she got up on that stage and lit up. Can she dance? And later in life, she could dance with her brother, the beautiful dance thing routines that you did with Mike. Mm-hmm. Very, very talented. And she's very talented. Also very intelligent. We've always been proud of her. I can't say enough nice things about her because I don't want her to get a big head. But no, she's very sweet, studious, and I left out the most important thing, God-loving and God-fearing. So she serves her fellow man very well. That's the most important of all of it.
Thank you.
You're more than welcome. It's been fun doing it.
I love Grandma.
I love you, sweetie.